that invisible self in you starts to talk to you. Yes, I am you. I am come. I am here. I am your spiritual self. I am real. I exist. I am the self of you, and I can walk through the fire. There must be that continuous, daily reconciliation to self, that daily redeeming of the appearance, that wrestling with the material condition, until you're blessed by self-identity realized, until you know that the one that is the Spirit of God, I really am. Then Christ in you is no longer crucified. And all of the hardship of doing this is rewarded. The easy path is not to do it and think you're getting all of the beautiful rewards the other way and to suddenly find they're taken away. It is harder to do this than not to do it. And only the belief in the ultimate truth of it will make a person do it. He, bearing his cross, went forth into a place called a place of skull, called in the Hebrew Golgotha. There's the skull. To bear your own cross is the sign of your guilt. That was the custom. You had to bear your cross. Actually, it was a cross beam. You didn't bear the whole cross. They already had the stakes planted in Golgotha. This is the transverse cross beam. And you bear it because the Jews wanted the world to know that Jesus was guilty. That's why they wanted him to bear the cross, which was a Roman custom. Even crucifixion was a Roman custom. They could have had him stoned, but that wouldn't have been severe enough. But you see, this is a boomerang. Because now what you see called Jesus suffering, this is the method whereby we are given insight into the consciousness of the world. The mind wanted Jesus to appear to be guilty. He had to bear his cross. The boomerang is that this is precisely the Christ method of revealing to us the nature of the world consciousness. And this is the world consciousness which is guilty. This is telling us that what is guilty here, what is really bearing the cross, is the world consciousness. And then to underline that, they go to a place which is known as a skull. If you think Jesus was crucified on a tree, you're mistaken. All that was crucified happened in that skull. The skull of man is where Jesus was crucified. That skull is the empty world consciousness, empty of spiritual awareness. That skull represents the nature of the consciousness that crucifies Christ in us every day. That skull is barren. That skull is hollow. And even though we think we have five senses, and we trust these five senses, one day we find it's only a skull. It only seemed to have intelligence. It never had. The only intelligence in a skull is false intelligence. Golgotha is where we crucify ourselves. That is where the skull or the world consciousness, which is hollow, barren, empty of truth, buries us every day. That's the meaning of the skull. That's where the religions of the world are worshiping today, in the skull, in the outer ceremonies, in the words, in the concepts, in the beliefs. But the Church of God is Christ in you. Identity, not a skull. The intellect buries truth in its skull. It worships that truth in its skull. And ultimately, it is too late. All that's left is that skull. Do you see the vast hypnotism of the human mind that is intended by having the Christ appear to be crucified in a place called Golgotha, the skull? That's why it is Golgotha, the skull. And this crucifixion today is the same. The skull of science, the skull of religion, the skull of psychology, the skull of government, the skull of personal sense is where we crucify the Christ. We have our 20th century Golgotha on the top of every person's shoulders. Come out of her, says the voice. You are infinite being. You can't live in a skull. You can't be guided. You can't have your administrator in a skull. You are the light of the world. Shine. And so person, which is nothing more than the creation of that which happens in a skull. Person is the effect or product of the activity in the skull. Just as the skull rules us and creates the illusion of person, so do we impersonalize and step out of the skull. We transcend the skull, the mind, the barren, hollow vehicle, which is not a vehicle for the Spirit of God. And we stand outside of that body, outside of that form, outside of that sense of life which says, that's me walking down the street, that's me going to the office, that's me getting married, that's me having children, that's me having my 50th wedding anniversary. That isn't me at all. The skull wants me to think that. Golgotha wants me to think that, and it's going to crucify me with that belief. No, that's not me. Son of God is never going to have a 50th wedding anniversary. Son of God had his 50th wedding anniversary 5 trillion years ago. Son of God is forever. Son of God has ever been alive, ever will be. Don't settle for 50 years when the Father says you are eternal. Don't settle for life that began yesterday when the Father says you are as old as I am, you have ever been. You are my life without beginning or end. And so we're getting out of the skull. We came through a fish, we came through a lizard, we came through apes, we're coming through a skull. We're coming out of the belief that we are mortal. We're accepting the Father's statement that mortality is never the child of God, and we are crucifying mortality. With spiritual awareness. Let's be still for a moment before our intermission. I'd like you to take it as a personal task for yourself to wrestle with the truth that where you are, there is no person. I don't expect you to like me for it. And I expect you to have many problems with that task. I expect you to stumble and hurt your knees many times. But I hope you will remember that that is your problem. That is your real task. And if from within you receive the assurance that this is so, and as you course through the Bible and your books, you find more assurance that this is so, you will find that again and again, as you stray from that task, finding new problems or a repetition of old ones, new fears, new lacks, new doubts, it will always be because you have not come to that agreement with yourself that there is no person where you stand. You're being fooled by the drama in time and space, the world broadcast called person, the image, which is nothing but a replay in time of all that you already are. And every time you forget this or succeed momentarily and think now you can forget it, you will make another mistake. There has to come a time when Christ in you is no longer crucified. Then you're perfect as your Father. Then you're the one realized. The Father won't accept any less. You may as well face it. That's the cross we all must bear individually. The cross of personal sense must be crossed out. If you're having trouble, let the soul of you, the John consciousness, receive of the Father for you. Rest in your soul above your mind. Wait upon the Word. The infinite power of love itself will always translate to the momentary need of one who says there is no person here but the life of the Father, and rests in the soul awaiting the expression of that life where you stand. Each daily task that you look through as a doorway to Christ enables you to reach the pinnacle. It's hard work, but it's divine work. And ultimately, it's much easier than laboring for the meat that perishes. We can take our little interlude now. See you in about 5 or 6 minutes. I think someone gave me some good advice a moment ago. They said, just give us a little something now, not too much, because what we've got is just fine. And I thought about that, and I agree. And so this is that little something. We're going to skip in order to do that only momentarily, because whatever I skip, I'll come back to it another time. In the 27th verse, Jesus says to John, "Behold thy mother." In the 26th verse, he says to Mary, "Woman, behold thy son." Now, actually, it's very probable that this gospel was written about 65 years after it happened. John had written some things earlier. It was called a Jerusalem gospel, but the way this final gospel ended up is written by the mature John, who already had transcended all humanhood. There are some omissions here which are intentional. Now, John knew who came with Mary. He knew that Mary had been summoned by him at the will of Christ Jesus to come to the crucifixion. He knew that Mary came with one of her daughters and one of her sons. She brought Ruth, and I think she brought Jude. But he doesn't say that they were here with her, because that wouldn't fit the text of spiritual identity. You'll notice who he does say are here with her in the 25th verse. "Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene." Three Marys. And all following the spiritual path. He was witnessing spiritual identity only. "And when Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved," it doesn't say he saw his younger brother and his younger sister there. He saw his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved. "He saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son." And the funny thing is that years before that he had said to the same mother, "Woman, what have I to do with thee?" He had said, "I am not your son." And now he points to John and says, "John is your son." Isn't this strange? Mary had eight children. But he says, "This one is your son." Even I, Jesus, am not your son. He had said that to her 3 years earlier when he had been at the wedding where water was changed to wine. "Woman, what have I to do with thee?" Meaning there is no relationship between the I, Spirit of God, and a material woman. And now he is showing her the other side of this, who her real son is. Her real son, in identity realized, is always he who has received the Christ. "And John, this is your mother." But they were not mother and son in a human flesh relationship. So this again is similar to his teaching us to leave mother, brother, father, sister for my sake. He is renouncing all human relationships and announcing the era of spiritual relationships. And he's telling the world that John is the Son of God. John is the real Son of God. Oh yes, Jesus Christ was the Son of God. But Jesus Christ now is leaving as an appearance in the minds of men. Who's left on earth who is the Son of God? To whom shall we look? Shall we look to Jesus Christ? No, he says, look to John. I go not away, the Comforter will not come to you. How will you receive the Comforter? You will receive the Comforter through John. Now let's see what he meant by that. Let's retrace several steps and pin this one real tight so we understand it. Now you remember in John 13:23. Now there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. Leaning on his bosom. You may remember that when we discussed that, we pointed out this was not a physical fact that he was reporting. This was a spiritual truth being revealed. And now we have its sequel. Leaning on his bosom, we go right back to John 1:8, way at the beginning of the gospel. That's 1:18. For a moment I thought I missed it, but we have it. 1:18. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. To understand God, you must be in Christ. Christ is said to be in the bosom of the Father. John is said to be on the bosom of Christ. And so there's your sequence. God the Father to Christ, which is God the Son, to John, which is God the Soul. From the infinite Father to the infinite Son, through the Soul, to you. John leaning on the bosom of Jesus, who is in the bosom of the Father. This is the direct chain of command. Oneness is attained then through the realization of God, knowing God aright, through Christ in you, which you receive through your soul faculty. And this is why Jesus says, Son, there is your mother, and mother, there is your son. The world is to receive its Christ initiation through its soul faculty. The new age of the soul is the entrance to the fifth world. Now there's one more detail, and I've got to go to it. It just seems important right now. On the cross where they divide his garments in four. Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments and made four parts. To every soldier a part, and also his coat. Now the coat was without seam, woven from the top throughout. Now you won't find that coat in two of the other Gospels. But John has it there for a purpose. Now his garments are divided into four. And this is the revelation that we are in the fourth world. This is the fourth day of Genesis. This is the fourth level of consciousness. The total truth, the garments of Christ are the fullness of the Word. And when they are divided into four parts, you are being told that you are, as a human being, in the fourth level of consciousness. The fullness of the Word is broken down, and we have had four worlds. This is the fourth. John, just a moment later, is designated as the Son because John is the entrance. The soul is the entrance to the fifth world. And that is why John included the coat. Now, the garments that are divided are the outer garments. Presumably the sandals. He wore a turban, although people don't usually see a picture of Jesus with a turban. The girdle. and the cloak, the four outer garments. The four outer garments are divided. There's an inner garment. That's the tunic. And this, the soldiers say, we will not divide this garment. We'll draw lots to see who will have it, who will own it. This is predicted in the Psalms, the 22nd Psalm. But you see, no garments of Jesus can remain because no matter can remain. Just as the physical form must go, so must all that is material go, to show us this is a spiritual being. This is spiritual identity. And as these four garments are divided, indicating we are in the fourth level of consciousness, so it is that throughout the four corners of this earth, in the four elements that comprise this earth, the truth is divided everywhere. And there is no truth in division. There is only truth in wholeness. And so we must look to soul to lead us into the next body, which is the body of the soul. And that will only lead you to another body, which is the body of the spirit, in the sixth world. And that will lead you to still another, to the divine light, which is the body of the seventh, in which you are a complete, full self. But always the body of light, the body of spirit, the body of soul, are always present in the now, awaiting your entrance, if you will walk through the doorway of matter. So John now becomes very significant in all our work. We are told there is an Aquarian age to come. It is the age of John. It is the age of the soul and of the soul universe. It is the dawn of the soul universe in our consciousness. When the garments which were divided are no longer divided, and we are lifted higher into the fifth realm. So maybe that's just a little extra something that will not take away our conscious awareness of the work we ought to do. Other things omitted by John, you'll notice as you compare the other Gospels, and they are because of that period when he was away fetching the mother of Jesus. And whatever he did not witness, he did not report. That doesn't mean these other things didn't happen. It means that he would not report on what he did not witness. In your assignment for next time, I know I'm jumping you around a bit, it seems, but I'd like you to look again at transcending mind and unconditioned mind in the Thunder of Silence. When you read transcending mind and unconditioned mind, you will see why it is necessary for you to live with the knowledge that only through soul can you become self-aware. Then you won't divide his garments. Now the outer garments were divided, but Scripture said they would cast lots to own the inner garment, and that's how it happened. And the reason is that you can only divide the literal meanings of truth, the outer garments. The inner garment is the imperishable truth, which is not affected by the intellect of man. Man's intellect can divide the outer garments, but they cannot divide the inner. That's why John alone could include the inner garment, which was indivisible. The inner garment, which is indivisible, is you. The indivisible oneself. It is never separated in spite of what man's mind may do. In spite of what may appear, your invisible self is indivisible because it is the infinite self. When you have found the inner garment of yourself, which is indivisible, which is the one infinite spirit, then Pilate has no power. Then Caesar through Pilate has no power. Then the intellect through Pilate has no power. The administrator of the world of powers no longer rules. The indivisible garment is individual identity as the living spirit of God. God, your individual selfhood, realized. That is the inner garment which is indivisible, which is pre-shadowed in the 22nd Psalm. The world around you may be awry. Everything may seem to be shattered. You can't pull things together. Those are the outer garments of the mind. The inner self is always one infinite invisible being. That inner self can never be divided. It is always you. It is imperishable. And your realization of that one is your realization of oneness. Then you're listening through the soul. Now you're having troubles in your human life like everybody else, no matter who you are. They're big ones or small ones. Jesus Christ had a lot of troubles too. But you stand in this invisible self because those troubles are there to make you stand in your invisible self. That's what they're for. They're there so that your invisible self may erase the illusion of them. And only when you're standing in that invisible self are you erasing all of the appearances that beset you. We've only got two or three more chapters now in the Gospel of John, and just two chapters in Realization of Oneness. And so we're at the place now where you've got to reach a firm awareness that the invisible self, which could not be divided by the soldiers, by the thoughts of the world, by the thoughts of material power, that invisible self is always inviolate. It is always your infinite identity. And you must learn to live in it. To be it, not to just come to it when you're in trouble. Where you are, there is no person. There is only your inviolate, infinite, indivisible, incredibly wonderful, glorious, divine self. Live in it. Consciously, look at Transcending Mind, Unconditioned Mind, chapters 5 and 6, again, in thunder. And we'll have a few surprises next Sunday. We'll end with a meditation. But if you are not there as a person, you cannot meditate as a person. And so just do it that way. see it's effortless when there's no person there to do the meditating, then you're closer to that realm called jhana's soul. You're letting spirit do all the meditating for you. Much love, and thank you again.
Thank you.